The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
I'd like to explore with you qualities of love and kindness and compassion and joy, equanimity. Traditionally, they're grouped together as some qualities called the Brahmaviharas, the divine abidings. The translation for that term, Brahmavihara. And I'd like to explore with you how they're intimately connected with our path of practice, our path of freedom. You know, typically, the orientation around the path of practice, of Buddhist practice, is described in terms of dukkha, of suffering. It's described in terms of needing to understand suffering, the First Noble Truth, exploring letting go of the cause of suffering, the Second Noble Truth, realizing the ending of suffering, the Third Noble Truth, and then cultivating the path leading to the ending of suffering, the Fourth Noble Truth. And so it can seem, with this orientation around suffering, dukkha, like how do these beautiful qualities of mind fit into this path? So I'd like to first explore a little bit about what these qualities are, the experience of these qualities, and then talk about how they're intimately connected with. We can't really ignore how closely tied they are with our exploration of letting go of suffering. They're very, very connected to that. So the quality of metta itself, the word metta is related to the Pali word mitta, which means friend. So the word metta basically has this connotation of friendliness, of it's often translated as love or loving kindness. So it brings these qualities in of the feeling of metta is one of friendliness, of caring, of connection, of kindness. It can have the expansive feeling of broad, expansive love, but it can also just be the simple quality of caring, of friendliness, of connection. This quality of friendliness connects us to others. I think that's the way we most think of caring and friendliness and connection in terms of relationship with other people. But it also connects us with ourselves. And I think this is a big area in our lives that we may somehow here in the West, that particular aspect of caring for ourselves gets overshadowed at times. So this quality of friendliness can be also brought to our relationship to ourselves and to our experience. Rather than having a sense of contentiousness with our struggles, can we be friendly with our struggles? I mean, after all, our minds and bodies are trying to take care of us. You know, they're trying to support us in our lives. The pains we experience in our body, it's not like our body is trying to make us miserable. It's actually trying to help us know there may be an issue or a problem. So, you know, our minds and bodies are trying to support us in their activities, and we often have a combative relationship with our experience rather than a friendly relationship. So this friendly relationship, the quality of friendliness of caring, can be also connected with our own experience. This feeling of connectedness, this feeling of friendliness, the basic quality is a kind of the open-hearted feeling that you might feel after having seeing a dear friend you haven't seen in a long time. You know, just that feeling of open-heartedness. That's the quality, that's the flavor of that quality of metta. When that open heart, that sense of not being contracted and fearful, guarded, when that quality of open-heartedness encounters someone who's suffering or an experience of suffering, the natural response of that open heart is the next Brahmavihara, that of compassion. So the qualities of love and compassion are intimately connected. We could say that the basic quality of metta is the quality of the open-hearted experience. And when that open heart meets suffering, the response of that open heart is compassion. There's a kind of a sense of a quivering in the heart, of a wish to help, to take care of, to help alleviate that suffering. I think too this the recognition or the connection of compassion seems easier in relationship to others. That we can feel a sense of wishing to help, of wishing that somebody else be free from suffering. And that feeling of wishing somebody else be free from suffering is often connected with wanting to get rid of it for someone else. So it has both this open-hearted sense of wishing to help and the sense of wishing somebody not be suffering, but also a resistance to that experience in ourselves of how can I make it go away? And that it's an interesting paradox that the feeling of compassion does come with the wish to alleviate the suffering, but not in a resistant way, not in a contracted way. And so often that feeling of recognizing or meeting someone else's suffering does come with some resistance. It probably is both, you know, or it's probably both this genuine wish for alleviating suffering and a sense of not really being able to open to it. So that's an exploration for us in terms of opening our hearts. Can we keep our hearts open, not contracted to the suffering of others? So much action is done in the world seemingly out of compassion, but more out of the resistance to the feeling of the unpleasantness that we have in our own experience meeting someone else's suffering. So we can sometimes act in not fully wise ways when we are responding or reacting more to our own reaction about suffering than to that genuine wish to help. So this ties together compassion and wisdom, that the releasing of that resistance brings in a possibility for the open heart to respond more wisely to suffering. And also that quality of compassion can be felt for ourselves. This, I think, for me was a more elusive experience, especially early on, that my stronger response to my own suffering was that of resistance, and not of the open heart recognizing, wow, it's like this. One of the times I saw this most clearly, it was quite moving to recognize. There's actually this funny feeling in my heart around some experience I was having, a struggle I was having in my life. And I'm like, what's this funny feeling in my heart? And I thought it must be, you know, loneliness, or it must be depression. And I was like, wait a minute, just, you know, don't go assigning things to it. Just what is the feeling? What is the feeling? And as I felt into that feeling, my heart just got bigger and bigger. And there was the recognition, oh my gosh, this is compassion for my own suffering. It was quite a beautiful and surprising feeling. That open heart that was not resistant to my own suffering, but still wished to act to alleviate that suffering. I think this comes in some as we begin to recognize our own mortality, our own ephemeral nature, that we are all going to die. And when we connect to this truth, one teacher put it this way. When we finally know that we are dying, and this is really know that we are dying. I mean, we know in our minds we'll die, but as one teaching in the Hindu epic of the Mahabharata said, we know that we're impermanent, but the actual sense, the reality of that doesn't enter deeply into our minds. So when we finally know that we are dying, and all sentient beings are dying with us, we start to have a burning, almost heartbreaking sense of the fragility and preciousness of each moment and each being. And from this can grow a deep, clear, limitless compassion for all beings. So the experience of compassion is connected to this heartbreaking truth that we do suffer. A non-resistance to that truth. The open heart meeting that truth. The response being compassion. When this open heart meets joy in the world, the response of that open heart is to feel joy in response. Think of how you might feel seeing a toddler learn how to walk, learn how to navigate. There's joy in that. You know, the accomplishment, the feeling of accomplishment and the joy that they have in doing things for the first time. How does that make you feel to reflect on that? Often it can bring a sense of lightness to the heart, a sense of joy for them, joy for their joy. So this open heart also resonates with happiness. It can be, this is said to be one of the more challenging of the emotions to really open our hearts to, because we seem to have an idea, at least for certain things in our grown-up world, you know, that if somebody else is getting something they like, it means less for me. So sometimes what happens when our heart sees one of the frequent responses when someone else is joyful in their lives is envy. Why am I not feeling that? Or jealousy? Why can't I have that? And what this is based on is kind of a mistaken notion that joy is there's only so much joy to go around. That if somebody else has some, it takes away from that limited pool of joy, and it means less for me. And actually, this kind of open-hearted joy is limitless. I mean, there are certainly things in our lives, certainly experiences, like, you know, if we're, like you see this in athletes, you know, that there's only one gold medal, right? And, you know, there's the disappointment of getting the silver medal. So there are certain experiences in life, certain things, where there is only so much. You know, there's only so many gold medals, right? One per event. And so we interpret the whole of joy as being that way. And that kind of joy is kind of a limited joy. It's about having something in particular, possessing something. And possessions, there are only perhaps so many possessions, but the joy of the open heart isn't about possessing. It's actually about openness. And we can see if the heart can resonate to the joys of others, as the Dalai Lama says, you increase your chances of joy, 7 billion to 1. So that possibility of taking joy in the joy of others increases our chance for happiness. I've seen this in my own a practice that I was doing for a while. I used to take walks through my neighborhood before I got a gym membership. And I would take walks through the neighborhood and run into similar people, and we'd start to smile at each other. And just the seeing of a smile, just had such a beautiful resonant quality. If somebody smiled at me, or if I smiled at them and they smiled back, wow, that was like, if you could be present for that, it was like, 30 seconds of happiness for a smile seems pretty amazing. So the that possibility of waking up to these smaller, what seem to be smaller kinds of happiness, the joy of being present for the rain, the joy of being present when the sun comes out, the freshness of the air, simple things, not holding to them, not trying to keep them, but just the appreciation of the moment. Appreciative joy is sometimes also the way this is framed. The fourth of the Brahmaviharas is a little bit different, but it is related to these three. So these three of love, of metta, karuna, and mudita are the Pali terms. Metta, love, kindness, friendliness. Karuna, compassion. Mudita, sympathetic or empathetic joy. Appreciative joy. Those are all three related to this open heart, the connectivity with others and with our experience. The fourth quality is a balancing quality of mind. It's upekkha, equanimity. It brings in the wisdom side of the equation. It's a balance of mind in the face of the many joys and the many struggles that are faced by life, by ourselves, by others, by other beings. That quality for equanimity is what allows the heart to be truly open and not restricted, not reactive, not reacting to suffering, wishing it would, with a contraction, wishing, I can't stand this feeling, let me make it go away. Not reacting to the joy of somebody else with a feeling of envy. So the quality of equanimity balances the mind to be able to really be open for the joys, the sorrows, really connected to experience. So how are these related to the path to freedom from suffering? How are they connected to that? The path itself, the Eightfold Path, we can look at the various factors of the Eightfold Path. And it comes, to me, it comes alive there, that we see that there is a connection. In the very first aspect of the Eightfold Path, wise understanding, one of the key definitions of wise understanding is understanding the first way it's phrased is what makes us suffer, what states of mind make us suffer, but then also what states of mind lead away from suffering? What qualities of heart support us to move away from suffering? So the traditional phrasing of this is that greed, aversion, and delusion, confusion, wanting things, to hold on to things, wanting to get rid of things that aren't pleasant, wanting to hold on to things that are pleasant. Those are the traditional, the basic core states of mind that keep us struggling, suffering, keep others struggling. Non-greed, non-aversion, non-delusion is the classic way it's phrased, lead us away from suffering. But those qualities resonate with some beautiful qualities of heart. Non-greed resonates with generosity. Non-aversion resonates with all forms of love. And non-delusion resonates with this balance of mind that's able to be with things, not the confusion, the delusion is a lot about this idea that something else has to happen, that it's not okay to have something pleasant slip out of my grasp. It's not okay to be in the presence of something unpleasant. So equanimity brings this balance of, brings a wisdom to the heart that allows it to meet our experience as it is. So the qualities of love, of compassion, of joy, of equanimity come into this very first factor of the path, wise understanding, that these qualities are helpful in our lives. So that's a basic understanding. You know, it's not just about getting rid of suffering. It's about cultivating these beautiful qualities. And I wouldn't even say getting rid of here. I mean, that's often the way we think about that understanding of these qualities lead us to suffering. Greed, aversion, delusion leads us to suffering, so we should get rid of them. Well, the teaching is that understanding them, understanding how the mind works around greed, how the mind works around aversion, and how the mind works around delusion, that understanding leads us to recognize that they don't serve us. As we understand that holding on to things doesn't serve us in a deeper way, doesn't serve us in terms of moving towards well-being, we actually see that holding on to something, in the very holding on to it, makes us fearful that it's going to go away, makes us tight and contracted around the holding on. So in the very holding on, there is not well-being. Likewise with pushing away. So we begin to see that these states of mind don't serve us very well. And it becomes very natural to start to let them go. So you don't have to push them away or get rid of them. There's a very natural movement in understanding. It's kind of like, you know, how you let go of things as you grow up because they're no longer of value to you or no longer important to you. It's kind of similar. With the understanding of these qualities, you see that they naturally begin to release, diminish in our minds. This is a slow process, but it is a very natural process that comes with the understanding. And with that understanding comes the recognition of the value, the benefit of generosity, of kindness, of compassion, of that heart that resonates in joy, of this balance of mind, of equanimity. So wise understanding, right there in the path, the very beginning of the path, appreciates these qualities. Right intention, the second aspect of the path, also emphasizes these qualities. The framing of wise intention is towards intention towards non-ill will, non-cruelty. So non-ill will is in the terrain of open-hearted connection, of metta. Non-cruelty is in the terrain of compassion. And aspect of wise intention, I'll just mention it. I won't try to go into it. I do whole Dharma talks on this topic because it's hard for us to take in, is relinquishing sense pleasure. And by that, it doesn't mean pushing away sense pleasure, but it means relinquish. It's kind of have an open hand about sense pleasure as opposed to a grasping onto, because sense pleasure will come and go in our lives. And if we try to hold on to sense pleasure, we will suffer. around that very contraction I was just mentioning. And so this relinquishment of sense pleasure, again, it's not about pushing away. It's not about saying it's bad, it's wrong. But it's about recognizing that holding onto it doesn't serve us. That's related to equanimity, to balance of mind. Again, that we recognize sense pleasure comes and goes in our lives. That we can be balanced around that as opposed to reactive, trying to hold on to it when it's there and being miserable when it goes. Imagine how it would be for you if how things are in the moment, the flux, the flow, were no problem. That's equanimity. That's a balance of mind. So right intention brings this intention towards kindness, this intention towards compassion, and this intention towards balance of mind. So can we engage in the world connecting to that intention? We may or may not have easy access to it, but it is something we can reflect on. We're talking to somebody, or we're going, you know, something, a practice you might explore in terms of intention in this way is, you know, thinking through your day. Where are you going to go? What are you going to do? Simple things, you know. I need to go to the gas station to inflate my tires, or I need to, you know, go to the grocery store. I need to go to the post office. Simple things like that. There's the intention that's associated with the thing that we're doing. I need to fill up my tires, I need to buy my food, I need to mail my taxes, you know, those things that we have to do. But can we also bring in, I'm going to be meeting people there. Maybe I could be kind to them. Setting an intention of kindness before we go. Just opening the heart to the possibility. And I'm not talking like about a deep, soulful gaze into their eyes, you know, it's just like a smile. How are you? You know, I hope you're well today. Just a simple friendliness. This is the quality of metta. Friendliness. Doesn't have to be this like, you know, somebody, one of the other teachers talked about like Hallmark greeting card. You know, it doesn't have to be like that. It's just simple friendliness. So connecting with the intention for kindness as you go through your day. The Dalai Lama says, when he was asked, well, what's your religion? And he says, my religion is kindness. Just the simplicity of practicing kindness can be huge for us. It would change our lives if everybody practiced kindness. The next aspect of the Eightfold Path is the three aspects of sila, of ethical conduct. And these are basically non-harming. These are engagement in the world in a non-harming way. This also relates to kindness, that the engagement in the world to not harm others is a kind thing to do. So can you recognize that? I mean, you know, simple things, again, you know, taking what's not offered, for instance, you know, that precept of taking what's not offered, rather than, for instance, you know, just this is an extension of that precept. This is generally meant as not taking property, but at the same time, we can extend this, you know, like, not like zooming up and filling the gap in where somebody's trying to merge. You know, just the simple letting yourself have a feeling of kindness in offering the space to someone. So again, this non-harming quality. And it can be helpful actually to reflect on your intention towards not harming. That can bring some joy to our hearts, that is our intention, to not cause harm in the world. You know, just this, the first precept around not killing living beings, even if we restricted that to human beings. Take joy in the fact that you are not doing that. It's not a small thing, actually. I mean, it seems like a small thing to many of us, but circumstances are difficult in certain areas of the world. And, you know, if everybody in the world could commit to not killing other living beings, we'd be in a different world. So don't take that as a small thing. You know, appreciate the kindness of that. It's like it's hidden from us, the kindness and compassion of that. Because it's like, you know, the way we walk through our world, we're not like having to stop from killing living beings all the time. But it is a kindness, it is a compassion for others, and it's there in your heart already. So touching into that sense. Then there's wise effort, which is related to the wise understanding. And the wise effort is to actually cultivate the skillful and to begin to understand and abandon the unskillful in the way I talked about before. So wise effort also brings in this cultivation of the skillful. This is an active cultivation. It can be an active cultivation, cultivating kindness, cultivating compassion in an active way. This is right effort. Often we emphasize mindfulness, and in mindfulness we are actually cultivating these beautiful qualities. Again, it's a little less obvious to us, but you know, just reflect on what happens when we cultivate mindfulness. We start to, in our own experience, cultivate a non-judgmental, non-reactive attention. Pleasant things can arise, unpleasant things can arise, and we are okay with that. Accepting of that, open-hearted about that. Mindfulness, that the quality of the non-judgmental, non-reactive attention, which brings equanimity right there, that is cultivating equanimity as we're practicing mindfulness to our experience. It also brings along the quality of acceptance of friendliness, of caring. When we begin to really meet our experience with this non-reactive attention, there also can be the quality of caring and of compassion, also of appreciation, of appreciative joy. If you're really present when you walk outside and hear the birds sing, whew, there can be beautiful joy in that. If you're really present for just a breath, there can be that connection, that open-hearted, friendly attention. Mindfulness can have a friendly quality to it, which is this resonance with the quality of metta. And we can also cultivate these qualities of an open heart through more active practices. The practice of mindfulness cultivates them kind of almost behind the scenes. I think of the active work there is meeting our experience, exploring the reactivity, that work of getting to know, understanding our suffering begins to strengthen that quality of acceptance, allowing, compassion, and of joy, and of equanimity. So the practice itself begins to strengthen those qualities in a kind of a, well, they come along for the ride with mindfulness, these qualities of the Brahmaviharas. But we can also cultivate them actively. And one of the ways to cultivate, there are formal practices for each of them, which I'm not going to try to go into today, formal practices in which we can incline our hearts towards these qualities. We do this often by connecting with particular beings, people, and seeing if we can open our heart to them, expressing the intention towards well-wishing, the intention towards compassion, the intention towards appreciating their joys, the intention towards being balanced about how they are in their lives. We can cultivate these qualities through that active practice. We can also cultivate these qualities through beginning to get familiar with what they're like in our lives and recognizing that. You know, when we see a small child or see, you know, playful puppies, or in my backyard there were these baby raccoons that would jump on the hammock and swing, you know, it's like just really enjoying the enjoyment of these beings. I mean, it seemed very clear they were having a good time. I mean, maybe it's anthropomorphizing, but it seemed pretty clear they were doing it for the pure joy of the swinging. So, you know, when you experience that resonance with joy, let yourself recognize it. When you experience the connection of friendliness, let yourself recognize it. Sometimes these moments go by us. You know, we're so busy thinking about the next thing to say or to do that we actually miss the fact that our heart is delighted to see our friend. Take it in. Mindfulness of it when it arises is one of the best ways to cultivate it. Another thing that we can sometimes explore is recognizing what the causes and conditions are that help us to feel more accepting, allowing, open-hearted. You know, you may find if you've gotten enough sleep, if you've taken enough time, if you have enough time to get where you're going, simple things like that can make a huge difference in your ability to be generous of heart, connected with other beings, rather than in your own world trying to get where you're going, or in your own world kind of exhausted and tired. Not to say that it's not possible to be compassionate, kind, and friendly when you're tired. It just may be more difficult, especially early on. Another fun practice to do is to follow through on acts of kindness when they occur to you. You know, how many times do we, like, have the thought, we see somebody walk up with a basket that's only got two or three things in it, and we think, oh, I should let them go first. But, gosh, I really have to get where I'm going, so I'm going to, you know, so we push that aside. So when you notice those simple acts of kindness arise, the possibility arise, follow through on them. You know, it can be delightful to do that, and, you know, it also can be a little humbling to see that it may not happen that often. but you know, just exploring it. And then also consciously practice simple acts of kindness. You know, the smile on a walk, the smile to the clerk in the store, or the postal carrier when you see him delivering your mail. Just simple acts of kindness. Practice them and see how they resonate. See how it is for you to do that. Be aware. You often get repaid many times over in being aware of how it resonates. The last piece I'll mention about how these qualities are on our path. This one's a little more hard to see sometimes, it may be a little surprising, is that as our understanding grows about the way it's not helpful for us to hold on to things, to push things away, and as we begin to, as those qualities begin to release, we actually start to see that underneath is often, underneath that wanting to hold on to something or wanting to get rid of something is a movement in the heart of wanting to be happy and wanting to be safe, both of which are expressions of metta at their purest. The wish to be happy, the wish to be safe, a deep wish that is a wholesome wish. And what happens is that we think that the way to be happy is to hold on to things and to get rid of things. And so on top of that purity of that wish of happiness, which often we don't even see, we don't even see that deeper wish for happiness. Sometimes it's hard for us to even express the wish, may I be happy? You know, to express that wish to myself, may I be happy? That was hard. That was hard initially. It's there. It's buried under this fear of it's not possible for me to be happy. So what begins to be revealed as these contractions and fears and confusion and holdings fall away is that at the core, these qualities are very natural expressions of being alive. They are just covered over by so much confusion, so much misunderstanding. And so this is another way that the path is intimately connected with these qualities. They're actually revealed to be very natural responses to life, not something. It's actually more that the greed, the delusion, the confusion, the aversion is obscuring this very natural wish for well-being for ourselves and others. And so as those release, we begin to see that open heart. It's a natural response of being alive. And then the confusion comes back and it's buried again. So both these qualities of an open heart, the qualities of kindness, of compassion, of joy, and of equanimity, we explore cultivating those qualities, opening our hearts to those qualities actively, seeing how they can be encouraged in our hearts, and they begin to be naturally revealed. In fact, they are the result of our practice as well. This is explored in some of the teachings of the Buddha, how in one particular sutta, it's a very beautiful kind of laying out of the way the path unfolds. And it starts by saying, the first thing we need to do is understand our suffering. And as we begin to understand our suffering, we begin to understand that, just what I was saying before, we begin to understand they don't serve us very well. And those ways that we suffer start to be abandoned. As we, as those things get abandoned, we experience confidence in the teachings. We experience a sense of, wow, you know, this is actually helpful. We see the benefits of the letting go. And that leads us towards a settledness of mind, a mind that is not so scattered and reactive. That mind that is not so scattered and reactive, In this teaching, I'm kind of laying out the path of it, that mind that's not scattered and reactive naturally begins to open to these qualities of love, of compassion, of sympathetic joy, and of equanimity. And from there, in that place of balance of mind and love, the exploration is then again to recognize, and those too are states that come and go. so that not to cling to those either. And that is freedom. But the practice takes us to this beautiful place. So, a few comments, questions, anything about this topic? Yeah, would you pass the mic back? We got one.
Could you perhaps expand on the concept of open heart to somebody else's suffering, and then not that restriction to recognizing that open heartness of yourself to the suffering, and then the action that you might want to take to alleviate that, help alleviate that suffering in others, where, you know, at what point in time do we just observe and are open to it and hold it and not do anything, and walk away and say, oh, that was nice, yeah, they're in suffering, and we let them.
Well, so one thing I'll mention, you know, it's amazing actually how often somebody who's suffering really simply needs somebody to be with them without fighting what's happening. You know, if you're with somebody who's having I'll tell a story from my own experience. I was with somebody who was remembering something that happened to them in their childhood that was very distressing to them, and they were starting to have a lot of emotional response, and I just sat down with that person and just started trying to be with them, to not resist the suffering of that person, to not ask them questions about it, to not like try to say, well, you might do this or that, or here's what you could do, but to just be with that person. And that friend was kind of struggling a little bit, and my friend said, gosh, I don't know what to say, you know. And I said, well, you don't have to say anything. I'm happy to just sit here with you. And with that, the floodgates just opened for that person. And I sat with that person for, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes while something went. It was kind of a releasing in them. I just could be there. And my work in that moment was being present. That was my gift to that person. It's not a small thing to offer presence without resistance. There might be some action, you know, like for instance, another example where removing suffering might have an actual action was another example from my own experience. My nephew was, we were having a family gathering at Thanksgiving, and my nephew was having a lovely time, like running around the house and squealing in joy, and we were all sitting having dinner, and I was sitting at the back side of the table, able to see the whole show of what my nephew was doing. He was about 2 at the time, 2 and a half maybe. He just learned to run, had a little bit of a wobbly run, but, you know. And as he ran, he found a loop through the house, you know, dining room, kitchen, living room, and he was just making circles. And at some point, he ran into the living room, and I watched him run straight towards the fireplace. And out of that moment, there was like, stop! You know, it wasn't just like, oh, sit and be with things as they are. You know, that out of my being came, stop! And that pulled him up short. And of course, he burst into tears. But you know, but my next movement was like, I need to get up and be with him. And so I went and sat with him in his confusion, in his struggle. And I said to him, "I'm not mad at you. I was afraid for you, and I told you to stop because the fire is very hot and it would have burned you." And so I explained that all to him. This really impressed him. It was quite interesting because when we left the house a few days later, he turned to the fireplace and said, "Bye, hot." So, you know, that's a place where action might be called for. But so often, our action is coming out of reaction rather than, you know, a true sense of the open-hearted response and a need for a response. And so many times, actually, presence is the biggest gift we can offer. And it's a gift we can offer ourselves as well. You know, it's amazing how that gift of presence opens our own hearts to our own experience. Yeah.
So I had an experience.
Hold it a little closer.
I had an experience with the birth of my third child, and we had hired a doula. And, you know, right before the baby came out, you know, it was very painful. And I was just kind of like having this out-of-body experience. And I remember my doula just looking at me. And she didn't say anything. And it was just like such a moving experience. Mm. And she was just meeting me.
You could feel her presence.
I could. And she just kept eye contact with me in a way that, I don't know, it was really hard to explain. And afterwards, you know, after it was all said and done, I said, I don't know what you did, but it was amazing. And you were just there, and you didn't say anything, and you weren't touching me. And she said, I held you in awareness.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And it yes. was just, it was really wild.
My friend came back to me several days later and said, what were you doing? I said, I was just trying to be present. He said, it was amazing. I mean, he said the same thing. You know, just that presence can be so amazing. When you've been experienced it on either side, I think, it's quite profound.
And I can still see her eyes.
Uh-huh.
It was really cool.
Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Maybe one more, if there's one more. Yeah, could you pass the mic over?
Do you have any tips around getting into that state of mind? Say, for example, you've seen glimpses in yourself of an open heart, and then the day sets in, you get distracted, confusion gets layered on top. How do you get back to that?
So the first place is to recognize, the first tip I would say is to really acknowledge that sense of open-heartedness when you do feel it. Connect to it. Remind yourself, this is that quality of the open heart. And there's actually layers of it. You know, it's kind of like we touch into a certain level of it, and that's our kind of gold standard for a little while. And then we might see, oh, actually there's a deeper level of it. And so there's kind of layers that reveal themselves of that. But take in what it is in that moment. Take in that experience. Mindfulness of beautiful qualities of mind increases their likelihood to happen more in the future. So that's the first thing. Patience is another one, just cultivating patience about the way our minds are. You know, so much habits in our mind. And when we're caught in confusion, delusion, patience around the fact that we're not able to connect with that open heart, that itself, that shift of patience, is the subtlest turning towards that open heart. It's open-hearted about the confusion. It's open-hearted about the struggle. And that, it's a slow process, grain by grain. But those are just, that's all I have time to offer at this point. But yeah, thank you. So thank you.